Mormon Stories Podcast is made possible through the financial contributions of its listeners. To keep it alive and available to future generations, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org. We have a caller on the line. John, welcome to Mormon Stories.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, is this John from Logan?
This is John from the Shaft Blog in Logan, correct.
All right. Well, you're becoming a mini celebrity, so welcome to Mormon Stories.
Well, it's funny you said that. My question is actually directed to Carrie. And Carrie, I was wondering if you have any kind of misgivings about this newfound celebrity. And in particular, do you regret it all, being many like atheists and ex-Mormons' favorite Mormon? Like, does that bother you at all?
It doesn't. It doesn't bother me because I respect a lot of people and what they've been saying on blogs that are associated with being former Mormons or being atheist. They have rational and well-reasoned and well-tempered and polite and respectful things to say, and I'm not embarrassed at all to be associated with those people. I do have my own personal beliefs. I still am a member of the church, and I'm happy that I am. I have to check myself sometimes, make sure that I'm not seeking attention and that I'm not allowing this issue to become about me. I definitely am trying to be vigilant to make sure that I'm not, you know, kind of used as a tool to promote other people's opinions and beliefs that I don't agree with. But I'm not afraid of being associated with people who disagree with me belief-wise, having them talk about me and what I wrote, and wanting to be my friend on Facebook and chatting me and when I'm supposed to be doing biochemistry homework. That's not something I'm afraid of.
Good to hear.
Well, thanks for calling in, John. It's good to talk to you. I got to come visit Shaft one of these days.
Yeah, please do. You're always welcome.
All right. Thanks for calling in, John.
Yep, take care.
All right. Well, while Richard's queuing up the next caller, Morris, there are a lot of people asking what the prospects are for the Supreme Court and the legal prospects for this whole situation.
Well, it's very convoluted, and as many people probably know, there's even a preliminary issue about whether the pro Prop 8 people have standing to appeal. There are some people who are opining, and the judge has asked for briefs on whether they're even entitled to bring an appeal. If they don't appeal it, it stops right there. If they do appeal, then it would go to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and sometimes they will hold three-judge hearings in the Ninth Circuit, but for something like this, it's very possible that they hold what's called an en banc hearing, which I believe involves nine judges. I could be wrong on that. Altogether on the Ninth Circuit, there are some 20-some judges. And you have judges ranging from those who have seem to sort of be on the side of gay rights, those who may not be, including one Mormon judge. I don't know how he stands, but obviously he's going to be, if he gets put on the case, it will be interesting to see if he feels conflicted at all by what the prophet has said. Then, once it gets past the Ninth Circuit, then the Supreme Court can hear it. It's not a court that is required to take an appeal. The court could just ignore it and say, let the lower court's decision stand and not even hear it, but I suspect that if it gets up to the Supreme Court, this is a important enough case that they would hear it. At that point, it's kind of anyone's guess. Right now, there are four justices on the Supreme Court, Roberts, Alito, Scalia, and Thomas, who are very conservative, and my own, if I had to handicap it, I would say they would vote to overturn the Perry case, the district court opinion. Then there are four that would be considered liberal, but we don't know about two of them. Kagan And Sotomayor really don't have any sort of track record on the Supreme Court. We assume they're liberal because they were appointed by a Democratic president. That doesn't always prove out on issues, especially social issues like this. Then you've got Breyer and Ginsburg, who probably, I think, would vote to uphold the lower court. And then you have Judge Kennedy, who most people would consider to be the swing vote. And who knows how Judge Kennedy would go. He's ruled in favor of issues that the community feels strongly on in the past, but none of those issues raise the same questions that the Perry case did. This would be breaking brand new law. And my own feeling, when I first heard that they were bringing this Perry case in federal court, I kind of felt they shouldn't do that. My own view is that they should have left it alone and let California bring another constitutional amendment proposition in the future, maybe in 2012, maybe later than that. And my feeling is that the voters would have approved it. If the courts rule on it, even if it goes up to the Supreme Court, you always have people who will say, well, it's just a bunch of activist judges, and the will of the people has been thwarted. I honestly think the will of the people at some point, and could be as early as 2012 in California, would probably be in favor of marriage. But that's just my opinion.
I have a follow-up question for him, John.
Please.
I've received feedback from people who criticize my letter because they say that the Perry v. Schwarzenegger case, that the proponents of Proposition 8 were basically counting on an appeal, that they were throwing that case, they knew how the judge would rule, and that's why they didn't bring their A game, they didn't bring their top guns out. That didn't seem to me, I don't know legal strategy, but that doesn't sound like anything I've heard before. Do you have any comment on that?
I don't believe that. That would be foolish. And most lawyers would never not bring their A game in a case as important as this. By not doing that, what they've really done is made it more likely that the case will survive on appeal, because on appeal, judges are supposed to respect the lower court's findings of fact, just because the lower court is the one who hears the witnesses and has an opportunity to judge them, whereas the appeals court doesn't. The appeals court is supposed to focus on issues of law. And so if what they did was punt below and not put it on their A game, then they set up a record that is much more favorable to being upheld on appeal. So I don't believe that.
Yeah, I wish I could have you in my pocket to respond to these things.
The pocket Morris Thurston.
I'll tell you what. Let's become Facebook friends. Then you've got me.
Coming to Deseret Book soon. The pocket Morris Thurston.
Okay.
Well, what I need is an iPhone app, don't I?
All right, we have I think we have a caller back on the line.
Yes.
Is this Greg?
Yes, it is.
Greg, welcome back. Sorry we booted you prematurely.
No, that's quite all right. Just kind of about the people who are sitting by Carrie's letter. It seems as though we've done a lot of assessing that assigning blame to those, like to students who are offended, or to faculty who are offended, or maybe even church officials who are bothered. But I feel like it's more realistic and more probable even that it's not so much those people who cause it to be pulled, but people who are donors to BYU. And maybe not even like big funders to the university in general, but maybe smaller donors specifically who give their money to the Daily Universe. And I was wondering if there was any hearsay about that, your thoughts on that, because I think that's a pretty viable option that kind of absolves some of the responsibility that like the university itself maybe could would have for that situation.
I have a comment on that. First off, I'm pretty sure Greg's in my ward in that case. Hi, Greg. Second off, I think that today, some friends of mine were looking through the ads, the people who take out ads in the Daily Universe.
Uh-huh.
to see if there was any potential for a letter writing campaign to put pressure on them to maybe pull ads and repercussions or in response to the Daily Universe's taking down my letter. And half of them were from half of the ads in the Daily Universe are from Brigham Young University in some way. And I find it hard to believe that the Cannon Center is up in arms about the Daily Universe pulling my letter. I think that they support the decision. So I don't know. I think that the main funders of the Daily Universe who would have put heat on the Daily Universe are from within BYU.
Hey.
As far as the university at large, I have no idea.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I haven't considered yet.
Okay. Greg, thank you. Thank you for calling Mormon Stories. Appreciate it. All right. I think Greg's gone. All right. Well, we're about 2 hours and 15 minutes into this podcast, maybe two clean hours if you count the fact that we got off to a little bit of a late start. I want to thank my listeners and all the web participants for calling in. We may get one or two more calls before we end. But I just want to, you know, one question that I'm kind of really curious about, I'm curious, you know, I guess all four of us here on the call, we're all still active in the church. And I'd be curious to hear how each one finds a way to make that possible. Let's start with Carrie.
Oh, that's a great question. My activity in the church is purely voluntary. I decided last year that being LDS was going to be a choice for me. I wasn't going to feel trapped into being Mormon. I wasn't going to rely on my heritage. I have an interesting heritage. My mother's side of the family goes back to Hiram Smith, and my father is a convert. So I definitely have a heritage of questioning and a heritage of loyalty, both mixing in me. I am a member of the Mormon Church because I believe it helps me accomplish my spiritual goals. It helps me love other people. It helps me feel God's love, as often as I can. And it helps me to feel a certain joy and confidence as I face my life. The basic beliefs of the LDS Church have served me well to give me, I think, a certain resilience as I face difficulty in my life. And that resilience is priceless to me. And I love the LDS Church for it, and I believe in it because of that wonderful fruit in my life.
Gotcha. Thanks, Carrie. How about you, Morris?
I think what Carrie said was very good. I would agree with all of those things. You know, I've been around a lot longer than the other people on this phone call, so I've had to deal with these issues for a long time. I began to be concerned about things, issues, historical issues, and other things shortly after I got back from my mission and studied them out. And the whole blacks and the priesthood issue I had to deal with. And where I came down was that there was so much that was being offered by the church, by my membership in the church, that was important and dear to me. I think that where we're at our very best as Mormons is a community of people who care about each other and who go out of their way to do nice things for other people. We've lost children who died as infants, and in each case, people just pitched in and helped us get through those hard times. And to me, that's the true spirit of Christ. And I think one of the problems and the issues I have with this whole gay situation is wanting to include these wonderful people in that feeling, in that that spiritual community. I guess that's probably all I need to say right here. I could say a lot more, but that's what's important to me.
All right. Thanks, Morris. How about you, Laura?
I think we've got a caller. I'd be happy to follow the caller.
Okay. All right.
Laura's so inclusive.
Yeah, she is. She's very polite and respectful to her callers. Okay, caller, welcome to Mormon Stories.
Hi, this is Nicole.
Hi, Nicole.
I'm from California, and I actually voted in the Prop 8 campaign, and I'm friends with Carrie, but I voted yes in Prop 8, and I know it might offend some people here, but I had a really, really hard time with it. I have a lot of homosexual friends, gay and lesbian friends, bisexual. I know a lot of people, and they would be very upset if they knew that I voted yes. But my point is that I had to search it out in my own mind, and I had to stay true to what I believe and follow the prophet for what I believe. And I know that he is a true prophet of God, and that if he tells me to do something, I'm going to do it, kind of like in the beginning of the podcast when we were talking about the primary song, follow the prophet, he knows the way. And that's our whole thing. And I didn't want to vote. I contemplated not voting. It was a really, really hard decision. And so what it finally came down to was, am I going to sustain my church leaders or not? And so in Carrie's letter, when he said that, about standing up and actually saying, yeah, I voted for this because the prophet told me to, that's kind of what I was calling in about.
Well, I appreciate you being willing to call in and talk about it. Do you regret your vote now, or do you still feel good about it?
I don't regret it. It's a really hard thing to talk about, and I had to think about it for a long time, and, like, I had to talk to my bishop about it and just tell him, like, you know, I'm having a really hard time with this, and the things that he would tell me are just, like, you need to do what you know is right in your heart and what you feel like Heavenly Father would want you to do. And although I have a lot of gay friends, I wouldn't mind if they got married, or I think they would be great fathers or great mothers or whatever. It came down to the fact that if I'm a member of the LDS faith, I need to do what my church leaders are telling me to do if I believe that it's coming from God.
Nicole, I appreciate the integrity that you have to talk about it and to talk about the reasons why you feel it's so important. I think that that's something that a lot of people have left behind, is integrity when they talk about political issues like this. And I think that having that integrity is really important.
I definitely agree. I feel like a lot of people that did vote in California with their friends and whatever, that they lied to them saying they voted one way when they didn't, for sake of not wanting to hurt feelings. Whereas with me, it came down to we just didn't talk about it. Most of my friends are homosexual, and it just would come to the point where we wouldn't talk about religion or decisions on Prop 8. It just had to be that way.
I'm sure that there are people who treated me the same way. But, you know, I think that it's important to stand up for what you believe in. And I have to say that, and this kind of goes back to our conversation before about why we're still involved in the church and why we did the things that we did. While you got the message that you got, the message that I got was very much one of somebody needs to stand up and say something on behalf of the gay youth who are in the ward and who are growing up and who are coming to church and hearing some of these very hurtful things being said. And so it's interesting. I always find it interesting when people talk about, you know, how they have an answer to prayer and they get one answer and I get a totally different answer. And yet I cannot negate somebody else's answer to prayer because it's as much revelation to them as mine is revelation to me.
Exactly. I actually had a friend in high school when I was a sophomore in high school. He came out to me. He was in my seminary class and he told me that he was gay. And there are people in our class that would make homosexual jokes and things like that all the time. And so I started standing up for him because he's sitting in the class. Nobody knew besides me, but I would say, you know, like, we're not acting Christ-like by saying that, like, these types of things. And so a lot of the people in my high school thought that I was a lesbian, thought that I was gay or bisexual, whatever. And honestly, it doesn't really matter what people think of you. It's what you know is right. And this kid, he ended up going away from the church because of comments made to him. And he tried to commit suicide and all this other stuff. And so, like, I've been through all of the stuff, and so I know how hard the decision is. And so it just comes down to, are you willing to die for your religion, kind of thing, like going back to the older days. Like, if you say, I'm a Mormon, and they're going to shoot you, it kind of comes down to the point of, do you really believe it, and are you willing to stand up for it or not?
Right.
Nicole, I think you definitely exemplify the point of my article. I do also want to point out, no one outside of a Mormon context is going to listen to what you just said. No one's not fair. Many people outside of a Mormon context are going to listen to what you say, and it's going to scare them. And that kind of reasoning is scary to people outside of the church. And I think that's why this is going to be an issue, because it's the difference between, it's a completely different set of how you make decisions and how you seek knowledge.
Exactly. No, I agree with that for sure, Carrie. That's why I wanted to call in, was because these people that are making these decisions really do need to say, like, yeah, well, I voted for it because a prophet of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints told me to do it. And that's simply what it came down to, the deciding factor. And other people are not going to agree with that. They're not going to understand that at all. Yeah. And I know that.
You know, I'd say one thing too, Nicole. I respect what you've said. And to tell you the truth, when I was your age, I probably would have said exactly the same thing that you just said. That's the way I felt. Sometimes as you go through life, your views change a little bit. But I think that I lost the train of my thought.
You were just saying that sometimes when you get older, things change?
Well, no, that actually wasn't what I was going to say to begin with.
Okay.
Let's go ahead to the next comment. If I get it, I'll come back to it.
No problem. And you know, I'm just kind of curious, Nicole. You know, I'm sure you know enough to know that, you know, we did polygamy and then we overturned it. That we kept priesthood from the blacks and then we overturned it. You know, you could look at changes in the temple ceremony or other instances where the church has made fundamental changes. You know, even the change to the opening of the Book of Mormon, where we used to call Native Americans Lamanites, and now we've renamed the Lamanite generation. We no longer, you know, try to refer to Native Americans as Lamanites. I guess I love the brethren, and I think they can often be inspired, but I think history's shown that they can also be wrong. And have you contemplated this? And you know, have you thought about what if, you know, have you asked the Holy Ghost to confirm whether this is actually a correct decision? And you know, what would you do if you followed the prophet, but it ended up that they were wrong? Would you feel bad? I guess I asked you way too many questions, but.
No, I totally followed you. I actually have thought of all of those things. I would be ecstatic if they were wrong. If then later they decided, you know what, homosexual males can hold the priesthood and they can go to the temple and they can get married and they can do whatever, I would be ecstatic. Like I said before, my best of the best friends are gay. And, like, I know a lot, and a lot of them are active members in the church, and I know that they struggle. They struggle with a lot of things, and I feel like they miss out on a lot because, and it seems like it's not fair that they can't experience relationships and things like that. But at the point where I am right now is what the prophet's saying at this moment of time, I just have to go with that. And if it ends up changing, then I can vote a different way later on if they want to overturn it. But as far as my testimony, it's not going to be shaken because people are angry with me because I voted because of a prophet of a church. But if it was wrong, I mean, I would be happy about it. I struggled with voting yes the whole time.
You know, John, it occurred to me what I was going to say, and that is, I think that what Nicole is assuming is what probably 95% of the people in the church assumed, which is that the prophet told us to vote in favor of Prop 8. Actually, if you look at the letter they sent out, it says, "We ask that you do all you can to support the proposed constitutional amendment by donating of your means and time to assure that marriage in California is legally defined as being between a man and a woman. Our best efforts are required to preserve the sacred institution of marriage." Now, that doesn't actually say that you are instructed to vote in favor of it, and I have specifically talked to general authorities of the church who assure me that that is that the prophet does not tell us how to vote. Now, that may seem like a small difference, but it's an important difference. For example, back a few years ago when there's a federal domestic DOMA, whatever that stands for, that was being passed, and Harry Reid was going to vote contrary to the way that the church had advised its members that they saw the issue. And apparently the stake president of Harry Reid's got very concerned and started sending letters to him saying that he might have to take action on his membership if he voted that way. And within 24 hours, representatives of the church authorities were down in Las Vegas explaining to the stake president that we do not tell people how to vote.
Now, Morris, I've worked for a few 501c3 nonprofits, and my understanding is as soon as the church crosses that line and tells people how to vote is when it seriously is in jeopardy of losing its tax-exempt status. Am I wrong there?
I'd want to go back, John, and really look at that before responding one way or the other. I actually think that churches have a wide range of latitude to tell its people how to vote on propositions such as Prop 8, not on candidates for office. But I think the church could tell us to vote one way and would not lose its tax-exempt status. But it is elected not to, and I think that's wisdom on its part.
Right. It would be a big PR loss, too. I mean, even when it's just an implied, like we had with Prop 8 and we had with DOMA, they always have the fallback position of, we don't tell our members how to vote. Now, they might introduce their letter about whatever piece of legislation with a whole bunch of talks from your bishop or from your stake president, you know, reminding you about the proclamation on the family and reminding you about church policy and the importance of the word of wisdom. And then they read this letter and it says, oh, by the way, you know, this issue is coming up in this legislature. Please contact your elected representative and tell them how you feel. Well, the implied message is that you're going to tell the elected representative that you feel the same way as the person who talked to you at church about it 2 seconds before they read that letter. But at the same time, they always have this fallback of, well, we didn't tell them how to do it. We just told them to go talk to their person or to go work for this proposition. But we didn't tell them they had to, and we didn't tell them how to vote. And they were free to make the choice. And I think that that's very important, both a legal distinction, but also from a PR perspective as well.
Yeah, Morris, you wouldn't doubt for a second. I mean, what the leaders, how the leaders want the members in California to vote, right?
No, I don't doubt that at all. But I also know that they're adamant that we all have the ability and the right to vote as their conscience sees fit on any political issue.
Okay.
And we can still be full and full-fledged active members of the church. Now, if I voted against Prop 8, is it likely they're going to call me as a general authority tomorrow? I think not.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's true. Well, I think it's maybe close to being time to wind down. Laura, I'm not going to let you off the hook. How would you feel about answering that question I asked you earlier? What keeps you in the church?
It's definitely the people, and definitely I've been a liberal nut since I was little, and since the ERA was going, I was a feminist at a young age, and but I find that by having one voice speak up, you realize that other people speak up too, and each person needs to make a safe place for where they are, and if all of the people who are supportive of gay rights and all of the people who are supportive of women's issues and all these other things, if we all left the church, so we would self-select and the church would be that much more conservative. But then think about the children who are growing up here and the kids who are in primary and the kids who are in young men and young women's, and they're coming to terms with their sexuality, and maybe they are these budding they're dealing with these same-sex attraction and getting these negative messages. And we can't let them wallow in the depression and the guilt and the pain. But if we all walk away and nobody's sending positive messages to them, they aren't going to hear that at church. And when they don't hear that at church and all they hear is negative issues, it's very easy to internalize the message that God doesn't like me the way I am. I need to change. I can't change. I don't have any other choice. Kids can't, their brains just aren't wired yet to think very super critically about the delicate issues. And so they need some blunt messages that says, you are good just the way you are. And if I can be in church and say that to one kid in my ward, great.
Right.
Plus, we have fun potlucks.
So
if I weren't there, they wouldn't have an organist half the time.
So you stay in the church as a service project and the potlucks and to play music. No, I'm just kidding. my guess is there are other things too.
There are.
Yeah. All right, Laura. Well, it sounds like we have another caller on the line. Caller, welcome to Mormon Stories.
Welcome. This is Sadie.
Tell us your name again.
Sadie.
Hi, Sadie. Welcome.
Welcome. Yes, I had a question about how everyone is saying, you had a choice. You could say this letter. It strongly advised you to help support Prop 8. I just wanted to point out, some people might work for the church. My father was a seminary teacher. And before the blacks could have the priesthood, my mother had a lot of miscarriages. And they were finally going to be able to adopt a newborn black baby boy. And my brother is white. And, my father, he didn't know how to teach seminary, and where would my black brother go? There wouldn't be priesthood for him. And some people really are held hostage by their job. And so if you're a BYU professor, if you're a seminary teacher, there's a circle of people that, I don't know how much of a choice they have. And so does anybody have a comment, how many of you would, quit your job over this? At a certain point, you might just need to provide for your family.
I think that anyone, you can still vote. I don't think the church had access to who voted which way. But as far as speaking out, I understand definitely your point.
So, I mean, you know, if you were, you know, what if you were a seminary teacher? What if you were a BYU professor and you have a gay child? You know, that would really be a precarious situation for some people. And even somebody similar to Carrie, but not Carrie, you're still evolving in your thought process, and maybe you figure some things out in college, the mind is still growing, and then here, you know, really your diploma could be held hostage.
I think your point is a very valid one, Sadie, that there are people for whom there is not very much opportunity to speak out if they're going to keep their jobs. It's absolutely true. I do know, I know of at least one BYU professor who is now kind of on emeritus status, so, you know, he can't be fired exactly, but he's spoken out very strongly in favor of gay rights. There are doubtlessly people in the BYU faculty who feel strongly against a Prop 8, and who have felt a little bit constrained to express their views. It's a fact of life.
I think the irony is, is when you're saying, hey, if the church leadership changed their position, we could all breathe a sigh of relief. But if some people within the church leadership, like, they don't dare speak, they could be the most held hostage.
Yeah, I maybe what you're getting at is, and I've often thought this maybe is true as well, we always hear about the brethren being unified on everything these days. It wasn't always that way. You can go back in the history and find where there were some very serious disagreements among the brethren on various points of doctrine. But now it's kind of more of a corporate church, and I think the idea is that everyone, you know, you'll have your discussions in private, but when you come out in public, everyone will get on board. I'd love to know what those discussions are in private. I do know that there's a very strong, you know, I've been in the church office building. I've been among people that work for the church, and there's a very much a reverence towards the general authorities, and particularly for the apostles. And if you're below that level, your freedom or your feeling of a willingness to speak out is seriously hindered, I think.
Yeah, and so that's where, you know, I just wonder about, you know, wanting the leadership to change, but then I think that those that are in positions of leadership and those that can really counsel our youth probably have the most fear to even speak the way they feel.
And Sadie, if I can pop up here too, part of the reason that I got involved with Mormons for Marriage and have been outspoken on this issue is because I'm in a place where I can, where my employment isn't threatened, where there's not going to be a lot of repercussion for me. And I feel like the more of us who are able to speak from a relatively safe space, if we're able to speak and kind of make a net and a groundswell, that hopefully that will start to create an environment where other people feel a little bit more safe as well.
Yes, and I also think that where someone's saying, you can still vote, nobody knows how you vote. But if you're a seminary teacher, I'm sorry, every kid is going to say, how did you vote? So you can vote and you can lie. You could vote and say, I'm not going to answer. You know, you could vote and tell the truth and get maybe fired. I mean, it's not that simple. And so
sure.
I guess that's where someone says, we can follow the prophet or we can't. And then there's all these, you know, the minions that are being paid, and, you know, they really don't have that much freedom to disagree. And I guess that was my point.
No argument for me.
And so with Terry, I guess I was going to say, you know, he says he's active and he says he's going, you know, to church, but even at a certain point, if there was a crisis of faith, it would seem, in my mind, it would be prudent to not acknowledge that until I got my diploma.
Yeah, I understand that. I feel like the things that I've been stressing, and the main part of my message hasn't been about a crisis of faith. And right now, I definitely feel like, you know, what I explore, what I'm thinking on my own, as far as my testimony in the church, it is smart to keep that to myself, because I think a lot of people on this broadcast have acknowledged that their testimony is a fluid thing. It's in motion, and it's growing, and it's being challenged. And so any snapshot in the form of an interview or something in print isn't going to be very indicative of where your testimony is at, maybe just a week or two down the line.
That's a very important point, I think, that Carrie made.
Yeah, I don't have any other comment or question.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Sadie.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I this has been a fascinating discussion. I appreciate everyone's participation, including those who are listening and commenting on the chat. I think it'd be kind of fun to end with each person sort of answering two quick questions. And I want to thank again Morris, Carrie, and Laura for coming on the show. But I'd like to hear what I'd like to hear what each of you think. You know, what you'd like to see happen in the church. What's an accommodation that you think that the church could make that wouldn't, you know, that wouldn't lead to a destruction of the church itself? So what's an accommodation you'd like to see made, and then maybe end by what you actually think is most likely to happen? So I know that's a tough thing to ask. Maybe I'll start with Morris on that question. Morris, do you have any thoughts on that, or is that too speculative?
Well, John, I what I would like is very much different than what is going to happen during my lifetime. What I would like to see is that we would recognize the validity and the importance of long-term same-sex relationships, of stable marriages between same-sex marriages as well as heterosexual marriages, and that, as Laura emphasizes on her website, that families come first, not just heterosexual families, but families. And I'd like the church to, I would love to see a day when the church recognized that, and when they truly could be, to treat gay members equal to heterosexual members by saying, if you have sex outside of marriage, then you need to see your bishop about that. But if you get married and you're faithful to your husband or wife, as it may be, then we embrace you with open arms into our church. As far as what the eternal consequences of that are in the heavens and the hereafter, that's far beyond my ability to say. I'm not a prophet. And quite frankly, I don't think that anyone, including the prophets of the past, have a really strong understanding of what that's like. We get bits and snatches of Mormon doctrine, but then sometimes they're taken away. If you study the history, things that we thought about the hereafter are either no longer stressed or outright disavowed.
Right.
So I'm not worried about what's going to happen in the hereafter, but I do worry about what kind of church we're going to be in this world today, and that's what I'd like to see.
All right. Well, thanks, Morris. How about you, Carrie?
Well, I think it needs to start by talking about these things. That's part of why I wrote my letter to the editor. I felt like things needed to be challenged. Some friends and I are starting on a brand new adventure I'm excited about. We're making a blog that we hope to turn into print someday, called the Provo Vanguard. And you can visit us at provovanguard.blogspot.com.
Shameless plug.
And hopefully it'll be a shameless plug. I'm not worried about it. and hopefully that'll be a place where people can express opinions. like and have discussions like this that is part of the BYU Provo community. As far as in the church, I would love to see a day where it's okay to say, oh, there's John, he teaches Sunday school, and he is a wonderful gay member of our ward. That would be a nice thing. It would be a nice thing that when young men or young women who realize that they have homosexual feelings, that it doesn't have to be a day of shame and embarrassment and self-hatred. And I mean, when I say a day, that's an understatement. I think a lot of people deal with that for years and years, that it can be just something you realize about yourself. It's a characteristic, a trait. It's like realizing that you're left-handed. You know, it might mean that there are benefits and there are disadvantages to being left-handed, but it's not an evil or a bad thing, and it doesn't make you an evil or a bad person. And I think I also would love to see a day when the gay community heard from members of the church and church leaders what the church leaders have been saying all along, or at least recently, that we love and respect gay people. I think it's our responsibility in that communication. Something's falling short. We might say that, people don't feel that. They don't hear that. They don't believe that. And I think if that's really our message, we spend a lot of effort in missionary work to convince people or to persuade people or give them reason to believe our statements. I don't know if we do the same thing with our statements about how we feel about gays and lesbians, both inside and outside the church. I think we can be much more proactive. It should happen in young men's and young women's, and it should happen maybe in general conference. I mean, I have faith that the topics of general conference talks are inspired and prayed about. I would love to hear a talk explicitly about the issue of how to show love to homosexual members in your ward. I think that would be great for the entire church. And I do think that those goals are things that I could see in my lifetime, for sure. I think that they are things that I have seen already, at least the beginning of.
Yeah, I mean, didn't President Hinckley come out with a speech basically decrying any racist speech, any hateful speech, and openly denouncing that in general conference?
Yes.
Yeah.
He did.
And it feels like, you know, there was this whole dust-up about the Mormon.org campaign and these commercials, and do they represent the church or do they not represent the church, and are they deceptive or are they, you know, representative? I think the real story there was how many members of the church have actually seen those commercials or even know that they existed. And I would guess that the answer is very few, relatively few. And I think it's the same way about Elder Oaks and Wickman's, you know, press statement. They made this press statement, but what percentage of the members of the church know, for example, that now the church no longer demonizes or considers to be a sin one's sexual orientation? I'd say, you know, less than 2% of the membership, maybe even less than 1%, are even aware of that statement. And I think a general conference talk would just go such a long way.
I have one more thing to add, John. I was the First Presidency issued a statement as well during the disaster in Haiti, asking members to raise money and to do their best to help people in that country. I didn't see the same kind of push from that statement that came when the statement came from them about Proposition 8. To me, there could have been just as much of an outpouring of resources and time and effort there than there was with Proposition 8. There should have been people stopping me in the halls of BYU then. I should have been getting phone calls and emails. I should have had special firesides to attend where my leaders asked me to help. It didn't happen the same way, and to me it seemed like a pretty comparable situation.
Right, right. Yeah, I saw a comment earlier on the chat board that if, you know, what an amazing thing it would be if the church used its same power and influence with Prop 8 and marshaled it for poverty or for literacy or for, you know, immunizations or clean water or, you know, daycare for children. You know, it's pretty sobering the power for good that the church could have if it chose to marshal it in that direction, no?
True, and I think it does do a lot. I do think we could all as members do more.
Yeah. All right, Laura, you're going to bring us home now.
Well, I think that the church has spent a lot of time instilling the message that we need to fight for traditional marriage and protect families, and it hasn't spent a lot of time instilling the message that we need to love and respect everyone, gay or straight. And I think that, you know, if we had 6 months of 3 hours at a time, every meeting dealing with protecting our gay loved ones and our gay family members, like we had in California right before Prop 8, you know, that would make a huge difference. But, you know, I think it's equally important that we remove from our vocabulary the phrase gay lifestyle. And I think that it's also important that we just stop talking about being afflicted with same gender attraction. It's not a disease that somebody has, you know, put upon you. I realize that they would rather call it a disease than say this is you or this is a crime. But, you know, I'm not afflicted with opposite gender attraction. So I don't think that anybody should be afflicted with same gender. I mean, that's just crazy terminology. I would love to see general conference talks, at least one a session, you know, or maybe even two. We could replace the hammering home about pornography with hammering home about loving your children no matter what they say, what no matter whether they're gay or straight or whether they don't know. We could have firesides that talk about what it's like to be a gay person growing up in the ward and hearing these messages over and over again and reaching out, and instead of singing Follow the Prophet, which is, you know, a fun song for the kids to sing, put equal emphasis on songs like I'll Walk With You, I'll Talk With You, That's How I'll Show My Love For You. I think that if protecting families is really the most important thing that the church wants to do, it needs to protect all of our families, and it needs to save traditional marriage by providing marriage counseling to young couples who are getting ready to get married so that they have the same expectations, so that their marriages will last, so that they'll learn how to communicate, so that they'll learn how to be good parents, so that they'll find ways to deal with the rough spots so they don't have to fight with each other and, you know, and instill poor coping skills into their children. And walk the talk, you know. It's been said before, Morris and Carrie both talked about, there are messages that talk about the importance of gay people and the importance of respecting your family and welcoming your children and telling them to choose life and not kicking them out on the streets. But those messages need to be hammered home just as hard and just as forcefully and just as importantly as the other messages. And that about, we've had all these folk doctrines come in and all these personal opinions, and by not speaking out against those hateful, bigoted messages, you have condoning by silence. And if somebody in Salt Lake City could stand up and say, this is unacceptable behavior, we do not appreciate it, this is not how saints should be acting, this is how you should be acting instead, that would make a huge difference. I mean, that's what happened when Salt Lake City passed their civil rights ordinances, and now you've got civil rights ordinances all over Utah. And if just by the word of, you know, the right people in the right building.
Right.
Well, so let's walk the talk.
Right, right. Well, beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Laura Compton, for coming on Mormon Stories. I don't know what's taking me so long, but I'm glad I've started down the road of repentance. And Morris Thurston, this is your second appearance on Mormon Stories, but I really appreciate you taking the time to come on as well.
Glad to do it, John.
And Carrie, it looks like you're bringing up the lead as a new generation of people who are willing to share their feelings and share their heart and take a little heat to express what they feel and what they believe in. So it's an honor and a privilege to be able to bring you on Mormon Stories.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed it.
All right. So with that, I want to thank again all the listeners and all those who participate on the chat boards. I want to remind everybody to go up to MormonStories.org to continue this conversation and to see other past episodes. I want to, thank all you guys for your feedback and your suggestions. Appreciate all the support. And I hope that we'll all do our part to help change hearts and minds within the church and without on this important issue. So thanks again to all of you participating, and hope to talk to you again real soon.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to discuss it with others, please check us out online at mormonstories.org. If you want to find other friends, family members, former missionary companions, or ward members who approach Mormonism like you, consider adding me, John DeLynn, as your Facebook friend. This may seem like a strange idea, but many of my closest friends have discovered that they are not alone in their thoughts or feelings or family or even a ward situation through discovering mutual Facebook friends. Finally, to keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider a donation at mormonstories.org. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton.